This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation where one of the greatest controversies, certainly one of the most enduring and permanent, involves taxation. Everybody knows you have to pay something in taxes. A government, a country, a society can't function without some money flowing to pay for the services, for the military, for the security that people need. But how much is too much? And how is the best way to tax people? And how did we go from being a country that resisted just pennies in excise taxes to a country that now accepts approaching 50% of what we earn going to government at various levels? It's certainly well above 40% today. There are lots and lots of shocking aspects to the whole history of taxation in the United States of America, and it's about time in this tax season, it's always tax season in the United States, to face the shocking truth about taxes.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
And the George Harrison song talks about the one-time 95% top marginal rate in Great Britain. We never got up quite that high, but we came awfully close. It's down again. There are a lot of Americans who think it would be better if we had that kind of rate of marginal taxation. There are also many Americans who think we need some kind of radical reform of the tax system, just erasing the entire mess of the Internal Revenue Service. Who started the Internal Revenue Service anyway? That and much more we will cover in this special broadcast. The hostility of Americans, particularly American founders, to taxation, very well known and very important to remember. Thomas Paine, the great revolutionary pamphleteer, the guy who in common sense made the strongest, best case that persuaded the colonists to go for independence, wrote in 1791, 8 years after the Revolutionary War was over, wrote a book called Rights of Man. And in the introduction to the second part of Rights of Man, he writes, "If from the more wretched parts of the old world we look at those which are in advanced stage of improvement, we still find the greedy hand of government thrusting itself into every corner and crevice of industry and grasping the spoil of the multitude. Invention is continually exercised to furnish new pretenses for revenues and taxation. It watches prosperity as its prey and permits none to escape without tribute." Eternal and eternally timely words. They're used by Amity Schles in her good book, The Greedy Hand, the title, of course, taken from Thomas Paine's quote, How Taxes Drive Americans Crazy and What to Do About It. The book was written almost 20 years ago, but it's still one of the better books about the modern system of taxation. But how did we go from the Constitution all the way there? Benjamin Franklin, who, of course, was at the Constitutional Convention, wrote not too long thereafter to a friend of his in France, "Our new Constitution is now established and has an appearance that promises permanency. But in this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes." Famous words. The Constitution has been permanent, and so have death and taxes, of course. But the Constitutional Fathers, as we've discussed, did try to make it very difficult to impose federal taxes. They had this mystifying prohibition on what was called direct taxation, but nobody knew for sure what exactly they meant. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, no capitation, meaning a head tax, or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. So how are they supposed to fund the government? Because with that prohibition, when they're talking about the census, what they're saying basically is you can't have a tax that is based upon how much property someone has. You can only have that tax based upon how many people live in a given state, which would create wildly different tax rates in all the different states if they tried to do that. So how'd they get around that? That was what Alexander Hamilton had to cope with when he took over as the first Treasury Secretary, and he was full of ideas. One of the big ideas that Hamilton cared about most was paying off the debts that the various colonies, the various states, had compiled during the Revolutionary War, because they had a tough time. Remember, under the old Congress, the Articles of Confederation, they had no right to tax for the federal government. What they did have the right to do was to call for money from the states. So to raise that money and to fund the debt and to pay the ongoing expenses of the new federal government, in 1789, right after they had swore Washington in as the first president, and the Capitol had relocated to Philadelphia from New York, where it originally was, and they're in Philadelphia for 10 years, and right there, Alexander Hamilton immediately orders an import tariff on 30 different commodities. And this is very important to keep in mind, is that until the 16th Amendment in 1913, most of the funding of the federal government was done by tariffs, by money that would be collected from stuff that was imported into this country. And there were also excise taxes, and particularly at a time when imports weren't that heavy, the excise taxes were important. The tariff on the 30 commodities that Hamilton imposed averaged 8%, so it was a serious tax. And on all other goods, it was 5%, anything that was imported to the country. And in 1791, 2 years later, Hamilton was able to persuade Congress to impose an excise tax. Now, the excise tax was imposed on one of the most precious products then manufactured in the United States. The product was whiskey. Why was whiskey so important? Because for people who were growing grains, it was tough to transport it. No railroads, understand. So grains had to be transported with wagons. It was much easier to distill the grains into whiskey and to send big barrels of whiskey to market because it was much more efficient and much more portable. The entire economy of western Pennsylvania, and not just western Pennsylvania, but most of Appalachia, including parts of North Carolina and South Carolina and Virginia and Maryland, all of that economy was dependent upon whiskey production. So the excise tax on whiskey was very dangerous. The people in the western frontier didn't like the federal government. It was far away. It was on the other side of the mountains. They particularly didn't like the idea of a tax on whiskey, and Hamilton knew that this was very important. Now, there's a whole conspiracy theory about what Hamilton was doing with the whiskey tax. The most a complete book about what came to be known as the Whiskey Rebellion, which was a real rebellion with real armies and real battles and real casualties. It was our first civil war under the Constitution. But the book is by William Hoagland. He hates Hamilton. He really doesn't like him. And he believes that the first Secretary of the Treasury actually deliberately imposed the whiskey tax in order to provoke the poor, struggling Pennsylvania farmers and the farmers in elsewhere in Appalachia to resist the federal government so he could use a great big army to affirm federal power. Whether or not Hamilton's attempt to impose a whiskey tax was a deliberate provocation, it certainly provoked people on the frontier. They massed in revolutionary armies. They put up liberty poles. They organized conventions and congresses. What they were doing, and many of them veterans of the Revolutionary War, was they were doing precisely what they thought that the Sons of Liberty originally had done some 20 years earlier. They were resisting the whiskey tax the same way that American colonists had resisted the Stamp Act or the tea tax. But the results were very different. Why? We had a president named George Washington who ended up actually leading an army into battle. That and more coming up.
Washington Policy Center, WPC, is Washington State's champion for free market reforms and is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. It's led the effort against state and local income taxes. Its research and policy analysis are relied on by lawmakers, media, and citizen activists for accuracy, fresh perspective, and to expose the political manipulation of data. Our state needs WPC more than ever, and we need you to be part of it. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. Is our country's distinctive power and prosperity the product of some happy accidents or criminal activity, or is it God's hand on America? That's the title, actually, of my most recent book. You can get a hardcover copy, personally signed by me, together with a full audiobook, and it comes to you together with an MP3 player so you can hear it anytime you want. It's all at a reduced price while supplies last. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for God's Hand on America, look for that audiobook and hardcover book bundle.
Introducing the all-new My Slippers from MyPillow. 2 years in development. Designed to wear indoor, outdoor, all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. And made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, you can get 50% off the new My Slippers. They're super comfortable, and you'll like them so much you'll want to get pairs of them for the entire family. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square and use promo code MEDVED. That's promo code MEDVED, M-E-D-V-E-D. You'll also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, like the Giza Dream bed sheets, the mattress topper, and towel sets. Call right now 1-800-320-6280. That's 1-800-320-6280 and use promo code MEDVED. Or go to the web at MyPillow.com. The all-new My Slippers from MyPillow.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
The music of the President's March, written in honor of our first president, George Washington, who was the first president to confront the prospect of civil war, of disunion, of secession, and a very serious armed resistance. This is a very special broadcast called The Shocking Truth About Taxes. And The Shocking Truth About Taxes involves the fact that we have not only had bitter political disputes over taxes over the years, but in the United States of America, we've also had actual warfare fought since the independence of our country over the issue of taxes. It was Shays' Rebellion in western Massachusetts that helped us scare the Constitutional Convention into actually creating a system of government that would provide a stronger federal government and a stronger ability to actually tax people. Because one of the things that is a backdrop for everything that happens with the Whiskey Rebellion is the truly desperate need to get the United States on solid financial footing. They couldn't simply ignore the debts that the various states had compiled. Hamilton assumed the debts. Jefferson made a deal, by the way, allowing Hamilton to assume all the debts for the federal government. The federal government would pay all the state debts. And in return, there was an agreement that after 10 years in Philadelphia, they'd move the capital to Virginia, basically, which is what they did. That's where Washington, D.C. is. It's carved a little bit out of Virginia, a little bit out of Maryland. It was moving to Jefferson's neck of the woods in any event. The point about the excise taxes that they imposed on whiskey, and it was 6 cents a gallon or 9 cents a gallon, this was considered to be horrible, not because people were so attached to whiskey, they were, but for the same reason that it was considered so horrible that the British were imposing special taxes on tea and on paper and on lead and on glass in the Revolutionary period, the problem was one of power. The farmers in western Pennsylvania would never have voted to tax themselves on whiskey. Whiskey was important in their economy. It was the way that they could get the grain to market. It was also served as a kind of barter. There wasn't a lot of money in circulation, not money that people took seriously at all. And very often they would use these barrels of whiskey and as currency. You would trade a barrel of whiskey for anything else. So all of a sudden to tax that was to paralyze the economy. People were already poor. It was financially hard times on the frontier. And what's more, a lot of the frontiersmen had spent a lot of their time fighting Indians. And they felt that their sacrifices and their commitment in doing that already represented a contribution they made to the federal government over the mountains back in Philadelphia. This is an old Pennsylvania squabble, though there were whiskey rebels, as they were called, who were in the other states that have part of Appalachia in them. Ultimately, this rebellion got very serious. William Hoagland, in his book on the Whiskey Rebellion, describes the unhappy experience of one federal tax collector named Robert Johnson. And he writes, "As the gang applied hot, noxiously fuming tar to the shaved head and nude body of Robert Johnson, the sludge's oiliness was absorbed by Johnson's skin, and a scalding crust grabbed hair, holes, and pores and clung everywhere. When Johnson was sufficiently sticky, the gang applied poultry feathers, which, when shaken over a freshly tarred victim or when he was made to lie down and roll in them, bonded with a slowly hardening blackness and could be removed only with time and effort. The triumphant gang took Johnson's horse and fled, anguished by the scorn due all public enemies. The taxman was left alone in the dark forest." Part of the unpopularity of the whiskey tax was the fact that it seemed to favor larger distillers who had, if they had a lot of whiskey that they were paying taxes on, ended up paying at a lower rate. This seemed profoundly unfair. They sent petitions to the federal government. Hamilton and Washington said no go. And then the resistance began in earnest. They put up liberty poles. They had rallies and meetings. One meeting drew 7,000 people, which is a lot of people. It all centered around Pittsburgh. They had a convention in Pittsburgh where they actually called for breaking up the union and withdrawing from the federal government, actually withdrawing from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Part of the problem with the whiskey rebels is they had no brilliant leadership, no leadership really at all. These were very local bands. And they did come together for one battle. 600 armed men, many of them veterans of the Revolution, stormed the home of a tax collector. He had brought in federal troops to try to protect him. And this particular battle resulted in real casualties. Two on one side, one on the side of the tax collector. And they they actually drove him from the field because they didn't have anything like 600 people to protect the operations of government on the Western frontier. Washington held a cabinet meeting, and he asked his cabinet what he should do. And three of the four cabinet members said it was time to raise a major army and to go to the frontier to restore order. The Attorney General, Edmund Randolph, thought that was a mistake. He voted no. He voted for conciliation. Washington decided to do both. He sent representatives out to the frontier to try to negotiate with the Whiskey Rebels at the same time that they called for militia draftees, in effect, from various states, including New Jersey and Maryland and Pennsylvania, of course, eastern Pennsylvania. Washington assembled an army of 13,000 men. And historian Paul Johnson points out this was a larger force than he ever commanded during the Revolution. And he actually met the force in toward western Maryland, rode out from the presidency in uniform on a white horse, reviewed them, and then sent them on their way. They were commanded by the governor of Virginia, who was a hero of the American Revolution, a great cavalry commander, Light Horse Harry Lee. So this is a formidable force. Alexander Hamilton came along. He was also a hero of the Revolution. He came along to observe. He was deeply, deeply concerned that this whole experiment in federal government would fall apart unless they enforced the rules on the frontier. There was great fear that there would be major battles, but with 13,000 men, 12,940 to be precise, and commanded by General Lee, Governor Lee, with all of that going on, basically the rebellion melted away. People were arrested. People were tried. People were marched back to Philadelphia, some 400 miles. There were great hardships visited on the Whiskey Rebels. And what was established by the whole episode? The right of the federal government to tax people, even when they hated it. More about Lincoln's contribution and the shocking truth about taxes.
Thanks for listening to the special history broadcast. If you want even more content from Michael Medved, go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and consider becoming a Medhead. There's so much content available. The 3-hour daily broadcast, commercial-free, hundreds of commentaries, 2 new podcasts, and lots more. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead subscription and become a member. Thanks for listening in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Do you experience fatigue when you know you should have energy? One reason fatigue can occur is due to a lack of antioxidants in the body. This deficiency happens the older we get, or due to eating an unhealthy diet, or even due to exercise. Your body's number one antioxidant is glutathione. When your cells are depleted of glutathione, you will be fatigued, inflamed, possibly depressed, and may also feel pain. Empirical results indicate that consuming green metal whey protein powder is the most effective means of increasing glutathione production. Green metal whey supplies nature's richest source of the precursor to making glutathione within the trillions of cells of your body. This protein strongly supports the cell's ability to make glutathione. Add to this that green metal whey also supports immunity, energy, lean muscle development, fat loss, and has anti-cancer properties, and you have nature's most complete and strongest superfood. To order, go to bestwayprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net. Or call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Biden is visiting Seattle to mark Earth Day. He's expected to deliver remarks about his administration's efforts to fight climate change and reduce the wildfire threats in the West. A hearing in Atlanta aims to determine if Georgia Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is able to run for re-election after a left-leaning group challenged her re-election bid over allegations that she helped plan the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol and is now ineligible. Congresswoman Greene saying a tweet asking for people to come to Washington, D.C. to hashtag fight for Trump was calling for a peaceful protest.
Under my opinion, I want to do anything I can to protect election integrity and to protect the people of my district in Georgia, people's votes.
This is USA Radio News.
Americans have the most colorful language in the world, and that vibrant language is our basis for thinking in big ways, new ways, efficient ways, and better ways. Americans have freedom of speech. The pairing of our colorful language and freedom of speech has made us the people and the nation that we are today. Imagine what it would be like not having the freedom to speak our minds, communicate our thoughts and ideas, and hear those from others. Americans have a passion for and yearn for the truth. There are those who want to destroy our freedom and right to hear the truth. The truth is under attack. GCN is under attack. I'm asking our fellow broadcasters and you to rise up and help us defend our right to free speech. Would you like to join us? Please consider visiting SaveGCN.com. Please help us bring you the truth 24 hours per day. I'm Vincent Finelli.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Melody of Thomas Jefferson's campaign song from 1800. It's Jefferson and Liberty. Jefferson hated the whole episode of the Whiskey Rebellion and thought that the government had overreacted. It was one of the things that helped separate him from Hamilton and Washington. He was already headed very much in that direction. Washington, by suppressing the Whiskey Rebellion, gained greatly in popularity and stature. As much as we can get any indication, this was a politically, in 1794, very, very popular move, and it was a triumph. In fact, Washington said that suppressing the Whiskey Rebellion had drawn from the American people the support for law and government that marked their highest character. And Hamilton said the rebellion had strengthened the government, and it made national finance flourish. It clearly showed that the federal government, the new federal government and the Constitution, compared to the old government and the Articles of Confederation, was no paper tiger, particularly with a world-renowned military leader like George Washington as commander-in-chief. People weren't going to mess with him. The hardships that were visited upon the people when General Lee... And that General Lee, by the way, Light Horse Harry Lee, the father, not grandfather, father of Robert E. Lee, the great commander of the Confederacy. Ironic that he was marching at the head of an army to suppress a rebellion and to suppress an attempt to break apart the Union when his son, so effectively, years later, led an effort at rebellion to break apart the union. The Hoagland writes in his book about the Whiskey Rebellion that officers administered warrantless searches and seizures of property and subjected detainees to harsh conditions and terrorizing interrogations. Some victims were told they'd be hanged unless they gave false testimony against elected officials. Every adult male was required to sign an oath of loyalty to the government. Not surprisingly, most people complied. They took a few detainees and marched them 400 miles to the Capitol, poorly shod and clothed, the Capitol being Philadelphia, under the authority of an officer well known by his superiors for the pleasure he took in denigrating prisoners. On arrival, the suspects were paraded in the streets as victory trophies, then imprisoned under conditions that were even more extreme than normal. The threats of a terrible punishment were never fully carried out. Washington insisted upon a policy, basically, of mercy and amnesty for any of the people who had participated in the rebellion. And the truth of the matter is that it has come down to history by the designation Whiskey Rebellion, which was Hamilton's coinage. And it's a way of making light of it. The way that most people talk about this episode is, oh, it was all about whiskey. It wasn't. It was about power and the resentment, deep resentment, of people that felt that they had no participation, no consent, that they had, in fact, taxation without representation. But this continued to be the way that government was funded. Excise taxes, taxes on various things. In 1796, there was a challenge to an excise tax that had been put on carriages. Carriages were usually used by people who had some money, so they thought they'd put a special tax on carriages. The Hylton case came down, and it said, no, this is not a direct tax, this is okay. And this continued until the War of 1812, which was a disaster for the United States. They had a tough time financing it. And in the War of 1812, a number of members of Congress, desperate to try to shore up the finances of the country, proposed America's first income tax. Now, this was based on the British model. The British in 1798, just 16 years before, had put their first income tax law onto the books. And the new income tax that they were proposing to fund the War of 1812 was pretty serious. It would be a tax on income of 10% on any income over 200 pounds. That was the British model. But it would have applied to people who were prosperous. This was deeply controversial. It was held up in Congress. Then the war ended, and the tax proposal went away, but only temporarily. It was another war that brought back the income tax and created the Internal Revenue Service. No, not World War I. It was the Civil War. Tell you how, coming up.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
A Viking prince sees his father murdered before his eyes and then dedicates his whole life to seeking revenge in the haunting and gorgeous epic The Northmen, now playing in theaters.
Why would he stow away to such a hellish place?
To find what was stolen from me.
And what is that?
A kingdom. And night by night, we will carry out my pledge of vengeance.
That's Alexander Skarsgård and Anya Taylor-Joy, who together with Nicole Kidman and the rest of a capable cast, help bring 9th century Scandinavia to otherworldly life. The visionary writer-director Robert Eggers, best known for The Lighthouse and The Witch, uses actual Icelandic and Danish thousand-year-old tales as his source material, with scrupulous and eye-popping attention to historical details of that brutal era. Rated R for brutal but unforgettable imagery, 4 stars for the ferocious The Northman.
This review brought to you by the Thank Heaven Foundation.
On the Michael Medved Show, this special broadcast, the shocking truth about taxes. And one truth about taxes that is undeniable is that in times of war, the American people are far more ready to consider and even to accept punishing taxes, even an income tax. The first income tax ever proposed in this country was introduced as part of a war measure during the War of 1812. It was never adopted because, fortunately, the war ended before then. And the nation continued to support itself, even through the Mexican War, tariffs, excise taxes. The various states had all kinds of means of taxing people. And, of course, most of the services for people were provided by the states, not the federal government. But all of a sudden, with the advent of the War for the Union, the need for major funding for the federal government became intense and extreme. And if you look at all of the reasons that the North actually won the Civil War after so much bloodshed and so much struggle, certainly economic superiority and superior economic management was a very big part of it. There were two big advantages that Lincoln started off with over Jefferson Davis. One was there was already a treasury. There was already established credit. The people were used to different countries and banks were used to lending money to the United States government. And that was a disadvantage. Is going into the Civil War, because of the Great Panic of 1857 and because of a lower tariff, the country, for the first time since the War of 1812, had run a deficit for 4 years in a row. And all of a sudden, here they have to fund this gigantic army and this huge military effort and a navy and all the rest of it. So Lincoln moved forward and pushed through at the urging of his Treasury Secretary, Salmon P. Chase, the same guy who's generally credited with putting In God We Trust on our currency.
To purchase this special show, The Shocking Truth About Taxes, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
Very bad. And since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again. And I was having a hard time walking, and the pain was very bad. And since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again, and the pain has gone away. I really am walking pain-free. So I just want to recommend this to anyone who has severe pain or any type of pain. It is really a miracle product.
Try Relief Factor. It has worked wonderfully for literally hundreds of thousands, and certainly for me. Go to MichaelMedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, and order your own quick start. Nothing to lose but your pain. The whole world to gain. MichaelMedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, or call 833-654-PAIN, Relief Factor. Don't you get tired of commercials screaming at you to buy gold right now with inflated promises on future values? In an unregulated industry, you need honest, real experts to give you solid advice to protect your wealth and give you top picks, too, on the best coins and bullion based on real-time data and historical trends. For example, as environmental policy becomes a hot topic, one precious metal that's been significantly undervalued for years is potentially set to surge. Nick Rovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, has long recommended this precious metal. Up to 600,000 ounces of this rare metal will be needed by 2030 to produce green hydrogen. Nick is doubling down on this pick, and you should, too. Call Nick to find out more. Now, I've been friends with Nick for several years, and he's my go-to guy when it comes to coins and bullion. I trust him. You can, too. Call Nick at 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
According to the World Gold Council, while demand for gold is surging, 72% of people reply they lack the necessary know-how to do so. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta, owner of Advantage Gold, hands down the highest rated gold dealer in the country. The reason? We lead with education. We've taught millions of investors how to buy gold safely and securely, and our in-depth gold guide explains everything you need to know. From what type of metals to consider, if an IRA or cash transaction is best, and how you can be certain that the gold you're buying is authentic, certified, and real. Call 800-900-8000 now and get our number one rated first-time gold buyer's kit. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the information you need to secure your future. Call 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000 today.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. For a complete list of history shows, visit MedvedHistoryStore.com.
Salmon P. Chase and Lincoln introduced and passed the very first income tax in American history. And it was passed in 1861 as a war measure, a measure of necessity. And because the Democrats and the Southerners had walked out of the Congress, were not represented there, the Republicans had full control. And yes, you could say that it was a all-Republican administration, Republican House, Republican Senate, and Republican president who imposed the very first income tax. But the net result of all of this, and the taxation got much more intense as the war wore on, was a huge advantage for the Union. The Confederacy had to print currency that ended up being worthless. People know about Confederate currency. People used to collect the old Confederate dollars that weren't worth anything, and even major denominations, and terrible inflation and great economic chaos in the South. But the South raised, according to James B. McPherson, the great historian of the Civil War, in his book Battle Cry of Freedom, his estimate is that the South raised only 5 or 6% of its funds by actual taxation, where the Northern government, because of the income tax, was able to raise a full 21%. That, of course, led to more credit, so they were able to take out bonds and loans, and they sold bonds, of course, to ordinary people. But the first income tax came online in August 5th, 1861. And the reason for it was not just to raise money, it was to assure the financial community that they would get paid interest on their bonds. The Republican architects of the plan made it progressive. They had income taxes of 3% on annual incomes over $800. That would be today incomes of perhaps over $50,000. But 3% tax was accepted by most Americans. There was very little tax resistance. And Senator Fessenden of Maine, who was one of the authors of the tax bill, said that that this particular progressive tax, which fell more heavily on rich people, obviously, would combine with the regressive tariff that they collected, where obviously poor people have to pay more relative to their total resource on tariffs He said, taking both measures together, I believe the burdens will be more equalized on all classes of the community. But that first tax bill of 1862 didn't do the trick, as 1861 bill didn't do the trick, which led to the 1862 Internal Revenue Act. And this is when the IRS was organized. Yeah, the Internal Revenue Service to pay for the Civil War. As McPherson writes, the Internal Revenue Act of 1862 taxed almost everything but the air Northerners breathed. It imposed sin taxes on liquor, tobacco, and playing cards, luxury taxes on carriages, yachts, billiard tables, jewelry, and other expensive items, taxes on patent medicines and newspaper advertisements, license taxes on almost every conceivable profession or service except the clergy, stamp taxes, taxes on the gross receipts of corporations, banks, insurance companies, and a tax on the dividends or interest they paid to investors, value-added taxes on manufactured goods and processed meats, an inheritance tax, and, ta-da, an income tax. The law also created the Bureau of Internal Revenue, which remained a permanent part of the federal government, even though most of these taxes, including the income tax, expired several years after the end of the war. The relationship of the American taxpayer to the government was never again the same. The progressive aspects of the earlier tax were expanded. The first $600 was exempted. There was 3% on incomes between $600 and $10,000, and 5% on incomes over $10,000. The first $1,000 of any legacy, of any inheritance, was exempt from the inheritance tax. The taxes went away after the Civil War. But the fact that this was associated with a heroic struggle to preserve the Union and associated with Abraham Lincoln itself made it easier for Republicans later, and it was Republicans who did it, to push for a change in the Constitution. About what? We'll talk about it coming up.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. A new study of the aging process demolishes one of the chief leftist claims about health care, that government control can eliminate inequality. The research conducted by Harvard and University College London looked at more than 25,000 people over 50 in the U.S. and the U.K. In both countries, subjects with higher net worth enjoyed an identical advantage of 8 to 9 disability-free years compared to those with little or no personal wealth. The results shocked experts who expected that Britain's highly touted government-funded National Health Service would produce more equal outcomes than the United States. Data strongly suggests the real difference in health and longevity reflect common patterns in both countries, where the poor are far more likely to smoke, to consume unhealthy diets, to abuse drugs and alcohol, and shun regular exercise. In both America and Britain, health depends less on government programs than on lifestyle choices we can control. I'm Michael Medved.
And on this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, The Shocking Truth About Taxes, people are always amazed to hear that we supported the tremendous growth of the United States of America. We supported even successful wars, many of them, without imposing an income tax, except for the brief period during the Civil War. And then there was an attempt to bring back the income tax in 1894. What happened was this, is we had been funding the entire government and all of its operations and all of our armies and everything else based on tariffs. Poor people and working people generally hated tariffs because it increased the price of goods. What you were asked to do is to pay more for any imported goods. Businessmen were fine with tariffs because it protected, by and large, what were called infant industries. Some of those industries weren't infant anymore, but it gave American industries an advantage over any foreign competition, obviously, with the American market. In 1894, in the midst of a terrible, terrible depression, President Cleveland, a Democrat, was president. The Democrats insurgents took over in Congress, lefties, populists, and others. And they pushed through a bill to lower tariffs, to cut the cost of things while we were going through this terrible depression, and to institute an income tax similar to what had existed during the Civil War. There were howls of protest. It was taken to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do this. It is a violation. It is a direct tax. Now, they didn't say every aspect of the income tax was unacceptable. What was unacceptable was taxing the profit that people made from property. In other words, for rents or from investments. And here's a dissent from Justice John Marshall Harlan. He wrote this in this famous Pollock decision. When, therefore, this court adjudges, as it does now adjudge, that Congress cannot impose a duty or tax upon personal property or upon income arising either from rents of real estate or from personal property, including invested personal property, bond stocks, and investments of all kinds, except by apportioning the sum so to be raised among the states according to population, this court practically decides that without an amendment of the Constitution, such property and incomes can never be made to contribute to the support of the national government. That's what the court had decided. But almost immediately, there were in fact calls to amend the Constitution. Those calls came instantly from Democrats and from populists, but later they were taken up and led by Republicans, including a conservative Republican president. Why? That is part of the story that Americans need to understand in coming to terms with the shocking truth about taxes in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Charlie Brown's adorable younger sister Sally makes a special relationship with a little dandelion that sprouted on a baseball field, but that may ruin the big game. In Snoopy Presents, It's the Small Things, Charlie Brown. Now streaming on Apple TV+.
Why, hello, little flower. Do you ever feel like you just don't fit in? Small guys like us, we ought to stick together.
Well, they have stuck together, even two decades after the death of Peanuts creator Charles M. Schulz. This new offering is full of colorful animation that brings the old comic strip to life and wholesome messages about brotherly love and the radical idea that consideration is even more important than baseball. It's only 38 minutes long, rated TVG, of course, but especially for very young viewers, this will be a guaranteed delight. 3 stars for It's the Small Things, Charlie Brown.
Have you heard about vine-to-bar chocolate? It's the winemaker's chocolate, the world's first chocolate made with well-vined Chardonnay marc from the beautiful coastal vineyards of North America. Gently pressed grapes are harvested after juicing, dried and finely milled and carefully blended into the finest dark chocolate. The Chardonnay marc contains highly beneficial grape nutrients, flavanols, and has a natural sweetness that flavors the luscious dark chocolate. Mouthwatering, flavorful, delectable dark chocolate goodness with Chardonnay sweetness and beneficial nutrients. And it's alcohol-free, too. It's Vine to Bar Chocolate. Order some today at vinetobar.com. That's VINETOBAR.com. Cold shipped to your door, it's Vine to Bar. Vine to Bar Chocolate. Visit us at vinetobar.com.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.